This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News, a program sponsored in part by the Lions Clubs of Boylston and Bolton, and thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, we will be bringing you news from Berlin, Bolton, Boylston, Clinton, Lancaster, Stirling, and West Boylston. Today, we will be reading from the April 24th edition of the item. This is Ellen. Local Runners Conquer Boston Marathon Course by Bill Marsh. Boston. There were 16 local runners who crossed the finish line at the 130th running of the Boston Athletic Association's BAA Boston Marathon on Patriots Day, April 20th. On a perfect day for running, defending champion John Korer of Kenya broke the course record with an eye-popping time of 2:01:52. In the women's race, Sharon Lokiti of Kenya won for the second time, finishing in 2:18:51. Wheelchair sensation Marcel Hug of Switzerland won his ninth men's title, while Eden Rainbow Cooper of Great Britain won the women's wheelchair race, her second victory in Boston. Katie Gauthier of West Boylston was running her third Boston Marathon, and she finished in 3:52:47. Gauthier, 27, a graduate of West Boylston High School and UMass Boston, was running for the Crystal Campbell Scholarship Fund team. According to his website, the Crystal Campbell Scholarship Fund was started in memory of the UMass alumnus who lost her life in the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing. The fund has awarded scholarships to students demonstrating financial need, with 8 or more scholarships awarded annually. Gauthier, a nurse, played soccer and tennis and was a cheerleader for the Lions while in high school. "I had 2 ACL tears playing soccer in high school," Gauthier said. "At UMass Boston, I played tennis and was always a runner doing local races. It was the ACL tears that made me realize how much movement meant to me," she said. "I couldn't do lateral movement, but running was something I could do. In 2022, I did my first half marathon with my mom, West Boylston's boys tennis coach, Sue Gauthier," Katie Gauthier said. "I realized after the half marathon that I could do a full marathon. All 3 of Katie Gauthier's Boston marathons have been with Team Crystal Campbell. I've run for the scholarship fund for 3 years and have raised over $30,000 and over $8,000 this year," Katie Gauthier said. "I enjoy running Boston, but it's not about me. It's about Crystal. Boston is an elite marathon, and you are running the same course on the same day as the professional runners," she said. "Everyone who competes a marathon is a winner, and it's great to have family and friends cheer you on along the way. Having gone to UMass Boston, I was glad I could help raise money for the scholarship fund," Katie Gauthier said. Jack Spaulding, 27, of Clinton, a member of the Central Mass Stride CMS Running Club, finished his third Boston Marathon as a qualifier in 3:28:27. He won the Tribute Road Race in 2024. Spaulding, who was recently married, will graduate from UMass Amherst next month. "I really hadn't been running as much," Spaulding said. "I just wanted to have a good time this year and enjoy the crowd. Part of the reason I haven't been running as much is it's my senior year in college, and I've been really busy with work and school," he said. "I didn't put any pressure on myself this year." "Boston is like a hometown race," Spaulding said. "You can drive to Hopkinton and then head to Boston." Spaulding, an ultramarathoner, particularly enjoyed this year's race. "It was so cool this year with the C-130 Hercules aircraft flying over in Hopkinton for the 130th race," Spaulding said. "As always, the start was awesome with the tailwind the entire race. All through the towns, you were being pushed by the wind. As prepared as I was really happy with the result," he said. "In the bus on the way to Hopkinton, I was sitting near people from all over the world. So it's truly a global event." Neil Fedman, 55, of Boylston, completed his 13th Boston Marathon with a qualifying time of 3:23:06. Feldman, an ultramarathoner, is training for the 100-mile Western States Endurance Run in California in June. He's a podiatrist at Central Mass. Podiatry and has been battling malignant myeloma for 8 years. "So I'm training for Western States, and I set a goal of 3:23 time in Boston," Feldman said. "The weather was really good, and at the half marathon, I thought I might make that time, and I did, and I'm qualified for next year." We haven't had a tail-in like today in years, he said. With my disease, I got really emotional towards the end of the race, and it was a special day for me and everyone else dealing with cancer. According to the BAA website, the following local runners by town finished the marathon in the following times. Bolton, Paul Bazzetti, 3:44:49, Evan Doig, 4:16:18, and Renee Jaworek, 6:07:01. Boylston, Neil Fedman, 3:23:06, Warren Hayden, 4:41:14, and David Desmarais, 5:48:37. Clinton, Jonathan Jacobs, 2:56:32, Michael Hoffman, 3:13:54, Jack Spaulding, 3:28:27, Harry Dow, 4:03:15, Bo Lorette, 4:15:43, and Ava Askren, 4:31:06. Lancaster, Ronald Sampson, 3:25:35, and Margot Sonia, 4:22:05. Sterling, Samantha Olson, 5:06:22, and West Boylston, Katie Gauthier, 3:52:47. Two contests emerge on West Boylston election ballot. West Boylston, with the deadline to submit papers now passed for the June 2nd West Boylston election, two contests are shaping up. Candidates still have until April 30th to withdraw their names. Three people have submitted papers for a three-year term on the select board: Michael Connors, Mark Frieden, and Winthrop Handy. And two people have taken out papers for a four-year seat on the planning board: Paul Anderson and Matthew Barakian. No one took out papers for a three-year seat on the Board of Library Trustees. Anyone interested in running a write-in campaign can contact Town Clerk Candace Livingston, 774-261-4021, or clivingston at westboylston-ma.gov for information. Running unopposed are School Committee, two three-year seats, incumbents Nancy Hubbard and Emily Lehman; Library Trustees, two three-year seats, incumbents Sharon Hennessy and Deborah Stamper; Planning Board, 5 years, incumbent Mark Frieden; Board of Light Commissioners, 3 years, incumbent James Bodoni, Jr.; Housing Authority, 5 years, incumbent Brenda Bowman; Housing Authority, 1 year, Bethany Ingram; and Board of Water Commissioners, 3 years, incumbent Michael Mard. The last day to file written objections or withdrawals is April 30th. The last day to register to vote is Friday, May 22nd at 5 p.m. Voting will take place on Tuesday, June 2nd, noon to 8 p.m. Clinton contest for select board seat. Several people have taken out papers for the select board, but no other contests are on the June 8th election ballot as the deadline has passed for papers. Two offices, a seat on the Parks and Recreation and a seat on the Library Trustees, had no takers. For 2 3-year seats on the select board, four people have taken out papers, Town Clerk Holly Sargent reported. Incumbents Matt Kobus and Sean Kerrigan, and Deborah Goodsell and Brendan Bailey, papers certified. Others who have taken out papers include moderator, 1 year, incumbent Terrence Ingano, papers certified. Solicitor, 3 years, incumbent Robert Gibbons, papers certified. Town Clerk, 3 years, Becky Schoolcraft, papers certified. School Committee, 2 3-year seats, incumbent Tana Zabentis and David Kezer, paper certified. Board of Health, 3 years, Michael Donovan, paper certified. Library Trustee, 2 3-year seats, incumbent Jill Ashton and Christina Gagliardi, paper certified. Library, 1 year, no one took out papers. Parks and Recreation, 2 3-year seats, incumbent Ryan Rollard, paper certified, and no one returned papers for the second seat. Housing Authority, 5 years, incumbent William McGrail, paper certified. Planning Board, 5 years, incumbent Douglas Price, papers also certified. For information, contact Town Clerk Holly Sargent at 978-365-4119. Strange but true, when births were big news, by Terrence Ingano. Strange but true. With the closing of Carter Memorial, the maternity ward of Clinton Hospital, in 1967, the item no longer carried the birth announcements like it once did. While looking over the old items, one can find some very interesting birth trends and news, which I'm sure was one of the more popular sections of the local newspaper in years past. For instance, in the 1920s, there were four sets of twins born at Clinton Hospital during the same week in April. The first to be reported was a son and daughter to George and Annie Lupke Trikas of Stowe. Unfortunately, the mother died the next day. 2 days later, a son and daughter were born to Patrick and Margaret Tierney Hester of Clinton. 3 days later, two sets of twins were born in our hospital, twin daughters to Brittany and Florence Felton Jackson of Princeton, and two daughters to Ephraim and Nellie Dooley Murray of Sterling. Four sets of twins in 1 week span. That's got to be a record. Although not born in Clinton Hospital, the Clinton Daily Item carried a rather unusual story about the Witoski births in Worcester. In 1951, two dads, both named Stanley Witoski, had sons on the same day at two different Worcester hospitals. Neither one knew each other, although one of them had relatives living in Clinton at 162 Green Street. Mrs. Witoski, the former Mary O'Connell, had a son at Worcester City Hospital. Mrs. Witoski, the former Lorraine Valancourt, had a son at St. Vincent Hospital on the same day. In an even stranger twist, both newborns had two siblings, one four-year-old and one five-year-old. Weird! In 1963, another record of sorts was broken in Clinton when seven children, four boys and three girls, were born at Carter Memorial in a 48-hour period. Of course, 1964 was quite a year for births in the town of Clinton, with 421 births recorded here, including five sets of twins and the most celebrated births in Clinton, the King triplets. Not only were they the first triplets ever recorded in Clinton history, but they were born on leap year day, February 29th, which I guess means they only have a birthday every 4 years. At least for the next month or two, the Clinton Daily Item had articles about the three infants, their parents, and their two older sisters. Mr. King took 2 weeks off from his job at Mass Electric to help out as much as he could. He told the Item reporter that the first night was the worst. We didn't know which one was crying or if they were all crying at once. He went on to say that the plan was to place the three of them in an adjustable youth bed with the sides up. But that plan had to be abandoned when the king of them all, that would be John, became just too noisy for his sisters and had to be removed to a bassinet in another room. By the way, John just retired from National Grid, and he's still the noisy one of the trio. When the children were about a month old, an Item reporter visited the Beacon Street home for more details. The proud parents were dealing with about 500 diapers a week, and the attending physician, Dr. David O'Toole, provided excellent care. Janice, years old at the time, could only claim, "They look like the Beatles." Michelle, only 1.5 years old, couldn't talk yet, but simply looked bewildered as she stared at them. All three were christened at St. John's Church, marking the first time that triplets were baptized in the history of the church. It seems like every 4 years, the Item would have a follow-up story about the King triplets, and they truly were the most celebrated births in our town. Terrence Ingano is a Clinton historian. A collection of his columns are on sale at the Holder Memorial every Saturday morning to benefit the Item appeal. West Boylston author publishes seventh book by Jan Gotsman. Resident Marie Inga has a not-so-secret identity, writing seven novels and having stories in three anthologies under the name Marie LeClaire. "I started writing almost by accident," LeClaire said. "I was having a hilarious conversation with friends about how to get rid of life's baggage. We started joking about having a yard sale and selling our issues and bad habits." Her newest novel is called A Gardener's Last Seeds, a coxy, mystical mystery about legacy and law. Novel number 7 is the fourth in the Last Yard Sale series, written in magical realism, so it takes place present day, but there's a little bit of unusual stuff that goes on, which is true in all my books. In a previous interview, she noted, "The series setting is always an unusual yard sale. Mary Beth's mystical yard sale adventures continue." "Didn't read the other books in the yard sale series. Each book is standalone," she said, but added, "to get the full backstory, you should start at book one." A Gardener's Last Seeds is about a Vermont family farm that has gotten lost in multi-generational inheritance situation, and it's about to be sold under an unfair law called heirs' property law. This law is a real thing and has been stripping small farmers, particularly black farmers, of their land since the early 1900s. "I became aware of it when a friend of mine was doing their genealogy," she said. While her books are available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo, LeClaire invites people to see her almost every Saturday at the Sterling Street Market, set up on the town common from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Signed copies of her book are available there for 23% off the cover price. She will be missing opening day, but will be available most other market days. I'll do my best to post on the market's Facebook page when I'll be there. I know some of my fans are eagerly awaiting my next yard sale book. She said, adding all her books are available at most online booksellers and at Amazon. Ginga has a new YouTube channel where she reads her short stories aloud, working now to include the entire The Last Yard Sale novel series. I'm playing around with a story about the multiverse and the past and future lives of our main character, who is a poet. And there's another yard sale story in the pipeline as well. Both will be novels and hopefully out by the end of the year. You can see I'm setting myself quite a task, she said, adding she also has a new website, marie-leclaire.com. And the Last Yard Sale ebook, the first in the series, is now free on all bookseller platforms, she added. Ginga is hosting a talk on writing and self-publishing, followed by a question and answer period at the Worcester Senior Center on Monday, May 18th at 10 a.m. Neshoba Neighbors Looking for Volunteers. April is National Volunteer Month. Consider volunteering with Neshoba Neighbors. Neshoba Neighbors is a nonprofit that serves older adults in Berlin, Lancaster, and Bolton. Volunteers can come from any town. The group is designed to help older adults with transportation, household chores, companionship, and other necessities, filling the gaps between what older adults need and what's available. Neshoba Neighbors is looking for volunteers. Driving is the most requested service, and drivers are needed. If you are interested in meeting interesting people and being part of an organization that helps older adults live more comfortably at home and reduces social isolation, call 978-226-8844 or visit neshobaneighbors.org and fill out an application. Governor headlines North Central Chamber meeting, North Central Mass. The 42nd annual business meeting and luncheon for the North Central Massachusetts Chamber of Commerce is scheduled for Thursday, June 11th from 11:45 to 1:30 p.m. at Great Wolf Lodge, 150 Great Wolf Drive in Fitchburg. As the region's cornerstone annual event, the Chamber's annual business meeting brings together hundreds of businesses and community leaders from across North Central Massachusetts to honor the people and accomplishments that are moving North Central Massachusetts forward, in addition to the Chamber's annual recognition awards and commencement for the Community Leadership Institute class of 2026. The event will also feature a tabletop business expo to showcase local businesses. The expo will provide exhibitors with a unique opportunity to reach business and community leaders from throughout Central North Massachusetts attending the event. The business expo will begin at 10:30 a.m. The annual meeting and luncheon will run from 11:45 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., and the business expo will close out the day from 1:30 to 2 p.m. This year's keynote speaker is Governor Maura Healey. First elected in 2022, Healey made history as the first woman elected governor in Massachusetts history and the first openly lesbian governor elected in the United States. Prior to serving as governor, she served two terms as Massachusetts Attorney General. Since taking office, Healey has focused on lowering the cost of health care, housing, and energy, creating jobs, and growing Massachusetts' economic leadership in cutting-edge sectors like life sciences, climate tech, advanced manufacturing, and applied AI. She will speak to the strength of Massachusetts' economy, especially in the North Central region, and the urgency behind her efforts related to affordability and business growth. The Chamber's annual meeting celebrates businesses and leaders working together to ensure a prosperous future for North Central Massachusetts and is funded by the support of businesses and organizations who are committed to that goal, including annual meeting sponsor Fidelity Bank, Business Expo sponsors Fitchburg State University and Workers' Credit Union, supporting sponsors Great Wolf Lodge, Guild of St. Agnes of Worcester, Inc., Mount Wachusett Community College, Rochelle Tool and Dye, and Rockland Trust, and media sponsors FATV. Registration for the annual business meeting and luncheon are being accepted through June 10th at northcentralmass.com. The cost is $65 per person for members and $80 per person for non-members and includes lunch. Reservations are required. Supporting sponsorships, expo tables and tables of 10 are also available. For more information about the event, contact the Chamber at 978-353-7600 extension 222 or extension 235, or via email at chamber@northcentralmass.com. Berlin Town Meeting, Starting Early to Get Through Business by Jan Gottsman. Berlin Town Meeting, May 4th, 6:30 p.m., Berlin Memorial School. See the warrant online. Berlin, when voters gather for the annual town meeting on Monday, May 4th, they need to pay attention to the time. Last year, the town petitioned the state to change the time the annual meeting begins. With the approval, this year's annual town meeting will begin at 6:30 p.m., which hopefully will get people out earlier. The meeting is still being held at Berlin Memorial School, 34 South Street. Officials ask that people show up a bit early so the registration process can be completed and the meeting begun on time to make things as efficient as possible. Child care is available from 6 to 9 p.m. in the BMS library, provided by LINK Link and supported by teachers and families throughout the Student Advisory Council. This year's warrant is 27 articles, including the annual election authorization. In addition to paying prior year's expenses and transferring funds from free cash to the Conservation Open Space Fund, in accordance with the Solomon Pond Mall Development Agreement, voters will be asked to transfer $24,945.73 from free cash to close out former fire department grants that required matching funds, and transfer $46,749 from free cash to fund the FY26 snow and ice deficit. The big article is always the operating budget, and voters will face 11 different motions, including to raise and appropriate $9,566,672 and transfer $344,961 from free cash for a total of $9,911,633 for the Berlin-Boylston Regional School District. This one is not without its critics. The Finance Committee voted 4-0 to reduce the total appropriation of $9,749,226. Select Board Member Peg Stone said the school budget will be discussed early in the town meeting after standard prior year items, which must be addressed first. This year, town officials asked that capital items be funded out of the town's operating budget, including free cash. The Capital Planning Committee recommends funding $194,537 of the district's requested $344,961 in FY27 capital funds. A breakdown of Berlin's share of the costs are listed in the warrant. The Finance Committee did vote to support the other budget articles. In other articles, voters will be asked to transfer $11,500 from free cash to fund the FY27 capital improvement plan for purchasing library computers. A secondary motion will be to transfer $276,145 from the Public Safety Stabilization Account to pay for the Capital Improvement Plan budget listed in Article 8 for police and fire equipment. Voters will also be asked to transfer $507,397 from free cash to the Capital Stabilization Fund, in keeping with the town's free cash guidelines to put 30% of certified free cash into capital projects. The difference between the $344,961 appropriated in the previous article and the $507,397 transferred in this article will help save for future large capital projects. They'll also be asked to transfer additional free cash to the Stabilization Fund for emergency use and to the OPEB Stabilization Fund. OPEB stands for Other Post-Employment Benefits and represents future liability. Also established spending limits for revolving funds and give a grant to the Public Educational and Government, PEG, access and cable for operating purposes in FY27. They'll also be asked to vote on 4 articles for Community Preservation Fund, 1 to transfer funds for administration, projects, and other expenses, and another for $40,850 from the Balance Reserved Fund for repair and restoration of the town clock, located on the tower of the First Parish Church building. The third is $40,200 to restore the Clark Conservation Area Trail and provide signage. The Clark Conservation Area was damaged by the tornado that went through in September, leaving trails impassable. The final CPA action is for $10,000 to do due diligences and expenses related to land acquisition, to be spent by the Conservation Commission in consultation with the CPA Committee. They'll also be asked to transfer $9,000 from free cash to purchase replacement voting booths, including ADA-compliant units. The new booths would replace the heavy, handcrafted units that are difficult to store and do not meet current safety and accessibility standards. They'll also be asked to transfer $30,000 from free cash to fund initial landfill monitoring studies as required by the DEP. Transfer $8,000 from free cash to pay for a hazardous waste day in the spring of 2027. Transfer $5,000 from free cash to fund the town's master plan update. Transfer $15,000 from free cash to pay for the rewriting of the zoning bylaw. This article is in response to the Solomon Pond Mall being sold to Industrial Commercial Properties, which is working on a proposal to redevelop the overlay district with a focus on light industrial use. The Berlin Planning Board is working with the Central Mass Regional Planning Commission to rewrite the town's zoning bylaw in response. Transfer $72,000 from free cash to fund paramedic training, which will transition the town from basic life support BLS to advanced life support ALS ambulance services. Currently, Berlin relies on neighboring communities for paramedic level care for medical emergencies, costing the town approximately $60,000 a year. Transfer $9,000 to fund the purchase, installation, maintenance, and repair of defibrillators for town-owned buildings and facilities. Authorize the town to modernize the way the town meeting warrants are distributed. Rather than mail a full printed and warrant to every household, the town would mail a notice explaining how residents can access the warrant online and or obtain a printed copy. Printed copies would still be available at locations designated by the select board. This is expected to reduce annual printing and mailing costs by approximately $4,500. Amend the zoning bylaw to update the town's accessory dwelling units bylaw. And finally, authorize the select board to acquire permanent and temporary easements for bridge construction and telephone guy wires. Bolton officials offer balanced budget no override by Jan Gottsman. Bolton Town Meeting, Monday, May 4th at 7 p.m., Neshoba Auditorium. View the warrant online. Bolton, voters will decide a 29-article warrant when the annual town meeting is called to order on Monday, May 4th. The gavel will call the meeting to order at 7 p.m. in the Neshoba Auditorium. After last year's $1.9 million Proposition 2.5 request was approved by voters to level fund services and continue funding schools, Bolton officials are not asking for another override, instead balancing the budget without one despite some challenges. The $34,901,624 budget is a 2.78% increase over the current operating budget, with 2.1% of the increase on the municipal side, $236,067, and 3.1% on the education side, $708,087. The municipal increases are for maintenance on town buildings, compensation in collective bargaining agreements with unions, and a 2% cost of living increase for non-union staff after last year not having an increase. Both the select board and advisory committee recommend approving the operating budget, but the voters were split. The select board recommends 2-1, and the advisory committee recommends 3-1. Both no votes reportedly are due to the more than 3% increase from the schools. Due to one-year events, including building inspection revenue for the new high school and Alta Neshoba and the successful auction of 7 properties in tax title, free cash was certified in the fall of 2025 significantly higher than usual at $2.3 million. In its statement, the Finance Committee said no free cash was used to finance operating expenses. Rather, the free cash spending recommended is for one-time expenses, as outlined in the Select Board statement. Both the Finance Committee and Select Board reports are part of the posted warrant. This year, after creating a capital stabilization fund as a supplemental funding source for capital needs, officials are asking voters to seed the capital stabilization fund with $579,428. Voters will also be asked to transfer $427,434.25 to the stabilization fund, which is the town's rainy day fund for emergencies. While Bolton has largely deferred allocating money for capital assets using ARPA funds in the interim, this year there are several capital items to address. After a structural failure last year in the water supply for the public safety building and library, the state mandated a temporary fix now in process and a permanent fix that the voters will be asked to fund at this meeting. The request is $125,000 for engineering and design costs for a permanent fix. Voters will be asked for just over $7,000 to replace phones at the public safety building. The current phones will not be supported after December. Another need is for cameras at the transfer station to prevent unauthorized use and enhance safety. Another part of the $33,833.05 request would be for the internet access, which would allow for future electronic point-of-service payments. Among the other nine articles addressing capital requests are $121,400 for network switches at the Florence, Sawyer, and Emerson schools, $101,700 for replacement doors at Emerson School, $75,000 to pave Marinette Road, and $75,000 to repair the earthen dam at Bower Brook, the cost of which could be reduced if grants are received, and the two dump trucks for the DPW. Two questions are not money-related but would allow for better service. The first would allow the town to accept easements in conjunction with land use approvals, infrastructure projects, and other municipal permitting without waiting for a town meeting vote, which would speed up permitting and projects. The second would allow the Select Board to expand hours for alcoholic beverages that can be served at restaurants and bars on Sundays and some legal holidays, beginning at 10 a.m. instead of noon, to allow establishments to serve a Sunday brunch alcoholic beverage. Zoning articles addressed a new land use table, driveways, major residential developments, inclusionary zoning, and the acceptance of Moderator Way, which the town now owns and has the funds to complete. Boylston voters will tackle budget capital projects by Jan Gottsman. Boylston Town Meeting is Monday, May 4th at 7 p.m. at Tohonto. See the warrant article online. Boylston. Voters will have their work cut out for them when they tackle a 41-article warrant on Monday, May 4th. The meeting begins at 7 p.m. at the Tohonto Regional High School. The major business of every town meeting is the town budget. This year, voters will be asked to raise, appropriate, transfer, and otherwise provide $24,662,755. Voters will be asked to amend the town's personnel plan and bylaw to change some grades and compensation for town employees. Spending includes up to $27,000 to replace the Council on Aging van, up to $91,000 to replace Fire Department Car 1, no more than $13,000 to purchase a drone to be shared by the police and fire, no more than $45,500 to replace or repair the second floor heat pumps at the municipal office building, no more than $500,000 to repair or replace the Boylston Elementary School roof, and up to $55,000 to update IT infrastructure for the police department, no more than $100,000 for continued police department building renovation, and up to $2,000 to repair or replace skylights above the Parks and Recreation Office at the municipal office building. In addition, an article is asking the town to appropriate $5,668,517 to pay for replacement of the roof at Boylston Elementary School, for which the town may be eligible for a grant from the Mass School Building Authority. The Finance Committee will make a recommendation at the meeting. The town is looking to appropriate money from the Community Preservation Fund for committee administrative expenses and community preservation projects. The Community Preservation Committee is putting forward four projects at the meeting, including $40,000 for historical preservation at the old burying ground, $11,250 for open space to control and eradicate invasive plant species at Rocky Pond, $41,412 for pre-construction engineering plans for Manor Park, with $37,962 coming from the Fund Balance Reserve for Open Space and $3,450 coming from the Undesignated Fund Balance, and $158,588 for the demolition and removal of existing tennis and basketball courts and installation of a multi-sport court at Manor Park, contingent on the Parks and Recreation Commission securing an additional $101,679 in matching funds. Not everything is money-related on the warrant. Voters are asked to accept the provision of a state law called the Prudent Investment Rule, which allows the town to invest trust funds. One article would authorize the Board of Selectmen to petition the state to enact special legislation to establish an employment contract for the position of police lieutenant. On the zoning side, voters will be asked to delete the current senior residential development section of the zoning bylaw and then amend the building and dwelling unit requirements. Another zoning change is to the section on animal control, talking about kennel licenses. Voters will be asked to accept 4 streets as public ways. Planning Board will make its recommendations on the town meeting floor. One local option will allow deferral of real estate taxes for certain qualifying seniors with incomes up to $20,000. And the Board of Selectmen is putting forward an article to allow delivery of retail marijuana products within the town, conducted in compliance with mass law. The first several articles are routine business, including allowing the Select Board to employ counsel, some boards to appoint officers and employees, and the treasurer to borrow in anticipation of revenue. Voters will allow the Municipal Light Department to use income from the sales of electricity to pay for the department, the town to accept state highway aid, vote the maximum amount to pay from revolving funds, and the compensation for different town officers. Clinton High seeks business partnerships for student internships. Clinton High School is seeking employers interested in hosting senior interns during the 2026-27 school year. The types of internships students have requested include healthcare and medical, nursing, CNA, hospital settings, radiology, ultrasound, physical therapy, and behavioral sciences, psychology, neuroscience, and social work. Skilled trades, electrical, HVAC, plumbing, and carpentry. Participating in this program will help build your future workforce, support local students in career exploration, strengthen community connections, and provide real-world learning experiences. To partner with Clinton High School, contact Katie Bradley at bradleyk@clinton.k12.ma.us or 978-365-4208 extension 13200 for information and for a Google form to fill out. They're creepy and they're kooky at West Boylston High, submitted by Deborah Horde, West Boylston High Performing Arts. The West Boylston High School Performing Arts Workshop class is set to present its annual spring musical, The Addams Family School Edition, Friday, May 1st and Saturday, May 2nd. Fans of the original 60s sitcom or any of its recreations over the decades will recognize the same lovable and laughable characters that make The Addams Family, a story that continues to entertain and resonate with the audiences 70 years later. "There's something about these characters that is so timeless and so fun to explore," said Debbie Horde, West Boylston's drama director. "At the heart of the story, as kooky and unique as these people are, there are really just a family who loves and supports each other, no matter how strange their ways might seem to others. I feel like that's a message that still should be shouted from the rooftops, now more than ever." Based on the characters by Charles Addams, the Addams Family School Edition is a comical feast that embraces the wackiness in every family, features an original story, and a dilemma that's every father's nightmare. Wednesday Addams, the ultimate princess of darkness, has grown up and fallen in love with a sweet, smart young man from a respectable family, a man her parents have never met. And if that wasn't upsetting enough, Wednesday confides in her father and begs him not to tell her mother. Now, Gomez Addams must do something he's never done before, keep a secret from his beloved wife, Morticia. Everything will change for the whole family. On the fateful night, they host a dinner for the Wednesday's normal boyfriend and his parents. The Broadway production features a book by Marshall Brickman and Rick Ellis, and music and lyrics by Andrew Lippa, and pays homage to the many years of Addams Family fun, and has become one of the most produced high school musicals in the nation. "I was excited to choose this show for students of West Boylston," Hort said. "It's well known not just to musical fans, but fans of the original characters and show. We can't wait for audiences to see all the fun we have been putting this show together. It's going to be fantastic." The Addams Family School edition will be presented on Friday, May 1st at 7 p.m. and Saturday, May 2nd at 2 and 7 p.m. at West Boylston Middle High School at 125 Crescent Street. Tickets are $15 for adults and $10 for seniors and students, and can be purchased online now at wbdrama.com. Tickets can also be purchased at the door with cash only. The Addams Family School edition is presented by arrangement with Theatrical Rights Worldwide. Greater Worcester Opera brings 1776 to Boylston by Jan Gotsman. As the country turns 250, Greater Worcester Opera, GWO, is bringing a historical musical to the Kalipa Stage, 150 Main Street. Founded in 2003, GWO is in its 23rd year, said Elaine Crane, the founder and executive director of the nonprofit. The group's mission statement is to present stage and concert works that feature classically and professionally trained local artists. GWO provides high-quality, entertaining, culturally rich productions to the audiences of Central Massachusetts, while at the same time creating valuable performing opportunities for the area's wealth of talented and experienced performers who've been trained in New England's prestigious conservatories, music schools, and vocal studios. The group performs concerts in the Loring Auditorium at Briarwood Community Center in Worcester, as well as its main stage show at the Kalipa Theater in Boylston. Crane said they rent that theater for the performances for many reasons. It's lovely, intimate space, and comfortable seating and air conditioning. It also has excellent acoustics, since we don't use amplification, and every seat is a great seat and provides an up-close experience, she said. In addition, the board and Dave Lutt especially are very gracious hosts, and Dave helps us in so many ways. The whole audience experience at Kalliope is wonderful for our shows. This year's main stage show is 1776, about the creation, writing, and signing of the Declaration of Independence. The 250th anniversary is a perfect time for us to do this piece, and our company has so many wonderful singing actors that it's an excellent fit for our talent, Crane said. Audience members will get to know the personalities of some of the founding fathers, the angst and determination they went into for the quest for independence, and they will get to experience the story firsthand by witnessing the arguments, the controversies, and the final vote, Crane said. Performers come from all over New England, but many are from the local communities. A West Boylston resident, Crane, will appear as Abigail Adams. Other locals include John Leslie of West Boylston as Ben Franklin, Larry Sealier of Boylston as Cesar Rodney, and music director-conductor Aldo Fabrizi is from West Boylston. "This Tony Award-winning show is brilliant from start to finish," Crane said. "Even though we all know how it ends, the compelling story has us all at the edge of our seats." Performances will be held at the Kalipa Theater venue, 150 Main Street, on Thursday, June 4th at 7:30 p.m., Friday, June 5th at 7:30 p.m., Saturday, June 6th at 7:30 p.m., and Sunday, June 7th at 2 p.m. "And we keep ticket prices very reasonable so that all may attend," Crane said. Tickets are $25 for general admission, $22 for seniors and students, and $15 for ages 12 and under. Visit greaterworcesteropera.org for more on purchasing tickets. Override canceled in Boylston. With the reduction in the school budget approved last week, Boylston officials announced that the Proposition 2.5 override to pay for the schools has been canceled. While the question will remain on the election ballot, town clerk Don Porter said voters will be told to ignore it. "That means a single contest will appear on the ballot when Boylston voters go to the polls on Monday, May 11th. Balloting will be from noon to 8 p.m. at the Hillside Gymnasium, Boylston Town Hall at 221 Main Street. Board of Selectmen member Seth Ridinger decided not to run for re-election. Taking up papers were Kelly Lazica of Ledgewood Drive and Vincent Sasso of Madera Court. Running unopposed are Assessor 3 years, Rebecca Dono Healy, Board of Health member 3 years, John Frederick Wenzel, Planning Board member 5 years, Mark Johnson, Municipal Light Board member 3 years, Steve Merrow, Library Trustees 2 3-year seats, incumbent Arlene Murphy and Kathleen Barry, incumbent Susan Throw chose not to run for re-election. Cemetery Commissioner, 3 years, Barbara Seed, and Parks and Recreation Commissioners, 2 3-year seats. Mackenzie Davis Martin, Porter, said Jessica Goldwinders is running as a known write-in candidate. There were 2 vacant seats. For more information, contact Porter at dporter@boylston-ma.gov. Reflections, closures have affected residents dearly by Jan Gottsman, item editor. So much going on lately, it's been impossible to note everything. But 2 closely, deeply affected people in this region and their closings deserve some mention. First is Colonial Candies in Bolton. We knew the owner was trying to sell the business, sell the property, finally get to retire. A year ago, the item interviewed Richard Hebert. At 77, he'd been making chocolates his whole life, but was okay leaving behind the chocolates his family had made since his grandfather started Hebert Candies in 1917. The Bolton location opened in 1978 and was still using the original chocolate recipe. But as he said, I'd like to retire. In early March, the item received its first message from a reader that there was a problem. She stopped to pick up her Easter bunnies, and there were no milk chocolate rabbits. The person working said there would be none if the sale went through. People kept noting over the next month that hours appeared erratic. By the end of March, potential customers reported a closed for good sign on the door. It was the end of an era. And so many people lamented that they couldn't make it to Easter, drawing parallels to Worcester's O'Connor's Restaurant, which closed just before St. Patrick's Day. The second closing was also a long time coming, but still came as a shock to so many. In March, Debbie Sargent closed Sunshine Cafe in Clinton, looking for a new life in Alaska. Sargent started Sunshine Cafe at Terrace Plaza in 2017 as a breakfast and lunch destination. They added the monthly Polish dinners later. They were a hit. She told the item in the fall that she'd been trying to find a buyer, but sales fell through. She had property in Alaska she was looking to turn into a welcoming place for visitors. She promised to let the item know when a buyer was found. The call never came, and monthly Polish dinners and weekly breakfasts are no more. Losing these landmarks is difficult for residents, to be sure, and their passing, like a death in the family, should not fade away without a word. Jan Gottsman can be reached at news@clintonitem.com. Candidates announcement. Kelly announces candidacy for Lancaster Board of Public Works. My name is Lawrence Kelly, and I am running for a 3-year seat on the Board of Public Works in the May 11th election. While I'm running unopposed, I would like to introduce myself to my fellow residents. I've been a Lancaster resident for almost 4 years, since buying my 23 Charlotte Street home office in May of 2022. I'm a 59-year-old mechanical engineer by training and career with Bachelor of Science BSME degrees, Thermal Fluid Science from Clarkson University in Potsdam, New York. My experience includes being the former city engineer in Pittsfield, a community with about 50,000 residents. My job included managing the wastewater treatment plant and managing an upgrade project. I'm well-versed in asphalt, stormwater piping, and water management, including wastewater and hazardous materials management, as well as experience with cemetery and historic preservation, also with writing proposals to win state and federal funding from Boston and Washington, D.C. for local road projects. And I've worked with the U.S. EPA repeatedly through my 35-year engineering career. I'm a U.S. Army National Guard retired veteran, 1988 to 1996, Cavalry Scout and Stinger Missile Soldier, service in Albany, Manhattan, and Ogdensburg. I have one and only daughter, Mary, graduating from the State University of New York at Albany, SUNY Albany, in May, informatics degree. I grew up in Guilderland, New York, near Albany, Guilderland High School class of 1984. I've been a New York and Massachusetts enrolled Green Party member since 2000 and remain one locally, primarily because of my training at multiple engineering schools, Clarkson, RPI, on the science physics of climate change. Remember to vote on May 11th. After fatal car crash in Shrewsbury, a widespread search for a victim's dog by Mike Eflin, Worcester Telegram and Gazette. Shrewsbury. Friends of the woman killed in a car crash on Route 20 are searching for the woman's beloved dog, which bolted from the scene of the wreck. The effort to find Austin, a Rottweiler, is the subject of several social media posts. The Facebook page Missing Dog Massachusetts has distributed a photo of the dog. Missing after a car accident, scared, do not call out to, chase, or try to catch, reads the post. The crash occurred on Thursday afternoon, April 23rd, on Route 20 near Shrewsbury Lumber. Gina M. LaRusso, 48, of Charlton, was pronounced dead after being rushed to a hospital. Her obituary remembers her as a bright star with a huge heart and a giant smile. She was a foster parent to many rescue dogs over the years. She worked at Opus in Shrewsbury. The two-vehicle crash involved LaRusso's Hyundai Elantra and a Mercedes SUV remains under investigation. The other driver was treated for minor injuries, police said. Austin ran from LaRusso's vehicle after the crash. A plea by police and LaRusso's friends for helping find the dog soon followed. At one point, a drone was used to scan woods in the area. As of Saturday morning, the dog had not been found. Among those eager to find Austin is Gregory Liss, LaRusso's fiancé. Gina and I have been together for probably the last 20 years, Liss wrote in a message to the Telegram and Gazette. We've been doing rescue transport for the love of dogs, and nothing means more to her, or nothing would mean more to her, than this dog coming home safely. She was always with him. They were inseparable. He would go to work with her at Opus, and he was loved by everyone within her office. He had his own name badge, and he was part of that crew. He was their official mascot. Shrewsbury police have asked for anyone with information about the missing dog to call them at 508-841-8577. Shazbot. Roger Cabler keeps the spirit of Robin Williams alive by Craig Seaman, Worcester Telegram and Gazette. The comedic spirit of Robin Williams was alive and well on April 17th, thanks to veteran comedian, celebrity impressionist, and Robin's unofficial vessel on Earth, Roger Cabler. Making his Worcester premiere, Cabler screened his documentary, Being Robin, at Cinema Worcester at the WCUM Front Room to an appreciative packed house. Following the film, there was a quirky Q&A candid confessional with Cabler, moderated by local hack Craig S. Seaman. In Being Robin, Cabler is visited by the spirit of the late comedian, who wants to take up residency in the confines of Cabler's already tortured psyche and stage a comeback. I made this movie during COVID, and I wasn't sure if I would survive COVID, even though I didn't have it. So I did the movie that I could. Which is not an apology. It's an explanation as to what you're going to see tonight, Cabler said prior to the film Friday night. I had a bizarre spiritual and possibly mental experience around Robin Williams when he passed away. The movie will explain everything. Not a laugh riot. In many ways, Being Robin is like watching a train wreck on steroids. No matter how raw and uncomfortable it makes you feel, you can't take your eyes off it. It's also spiritually rewarding with its underlying message that love will always conquer hate. While Cabler is a funny, clever guy in his own right, and the movie is about his soul being hijacked by Williams, another funny, clever guy, the movie isn't a laugh riot. True, Being Robin has its righteous, funny moments, but this film is more about real-life mental struggles, emotional breakdowns, and tragic losses. Think laughing through the tears. That being said, it's far from being a downer. Some of you might not find this film funny, I'm sorry, but that is my reality. All I can say is what I've already said. Everything after that is just explicative. Oh, speaking of explicative, there's something naughty, some naughty words in this, Cabler said moments prior to Friday's screening. This is very much in the line with Robin Williams' sensibility and the way he spoke. And what he was obsessed with. And I wanted to be honest to the subject of the movie. So if you cringe, if you want to storm out, I understand. It's not bad. It's not unkind. It's not racist. It's Robin. Not appearing in this picture. In the film, the real-life Cabler is visited by the troubled spirit of Robin Williams, who has some unfinished business on Earth. Cabler, who isn't a dead ringer for Williams in person, is visited by an older, weather-beaten and bearded Williams that the audience will mistaken as the real thing. The joke's on them. "Enjoy the film," Cabler said as the house lights went off. Oh, by the way, there were no actual image of Robin Williams in Being Robin. It's just me. Many in the audience could swear that they say Robin Williams in Being Robin, that they saw him. Cabler's transformation into Williams, from the subtle gestures to the distinguishing nuances, as well as the nervous tics and inflections, are nothing less than uncanny. After the screening, Cabler once again explained why the film wasn't a laughing riot. "I wanted the movie originally to be funnier, but then I realized it would have been the same. It wouldn't have the same emotional impact if it was just jokey. And originally, I wanted to do sort of a Ron Howard kind of fun tribute to Robin, but I couldn't have the lightness if we didn't get into the dark," Cabler said. The movie said, "We got to bring the dark, you got to bring the trauma, and I was traumatized. I still am by his death. And having experienced that, I just wanted to say, when we remember Robin, I just want you to be happy, but you know that I had to go through that, and that's how the movie came about." In the film, Cabler miraculously joined together the two halves of Robin Williams, conflicting psyches, and even rewrote the comedian's tragic end to some degree. "I am a comedian. I started out as an actor and ended up being a comedian," Cabler said. "And all through this, I was always doing Robin. Falling down a hole." In many ways, Cabler has been staging the Robin Williams comeback for some time with his one-man tribute show, The Spirit of Robin Williams, despite the beloved comedian being dead for close to 12 years. "The tribute that I did as a result of me experiencing Robin's death wasn't quite like it's portrayed in Being Robin. I wanted to do it more esoteric and poetic in the movie. But the actual event after he died hit me like a locomotive. And it's hard for me to talk about it because I really identified with him from the time I was 17. And I started doing Robin in my act, and I wanted to be him," Cabler explained. "So when he died, I looked in the mirror and I just made a face, and I was possessed for about 5 minutes. And I felt myself falling into this hole. I was just freaking out, and it was really upsetting. And I did end up on medication because I didn't know what was happening to me." During the Q&A, it wasn't all about Robin. Cabler also did a killer Christopher Walken's impression. Hilarious showed the audience what it would sound like if Robin Williams played Michael Corleone in Godfather and Norman Bates in Psycho, as well as Groucho Marx playing Rhett Butler in Gone with the Wind. Cabler also did an impression of former 90s presidential candidate Ross Perot and a whimsical Wizard of Oz parody that took place in Worcester and where no one pronounces R's, and funny reenactment of a dinner date he briefly had with Halle Berry. Also making this a perfect evening celebrating the human condition, Cabler's sister, Lisa Goldwyn, and his best friend, Nikki Sin, provided some classical guitar and acoustic rock guitar to get people in the mood for the festivities. For those who missed it, Being Robin is available on Amazon and Google Play and Apple TV. Worcester County Wonders. Leominster's pride is hot, pink, and plastic. Drive through any suburban neighborhood in the United States and you're bound to spot at least one pink plastic flamingo. But for Leominster, the lawn ornament created within the city limits is more than just decorations. It's a symbol of the community. "I just have this thing about rodents," said Leominster Mayor Dean Mazzaro ahead of this past Groundhog Day. "I just thought this is terrible. Everyone is just waiting for a rodent to come out of a hole. So I thought, well, no one has ever had anything bad to say about flamingos." Since 2007, Mozzarella and the city of Leominster have thrown their own version of the holiday using a quintessential symbol of the community, the plastic pink flamingo. Leominster bills itself as the plastic capital of the world, with household names like Tupperware and the plastic comb emerging from the city's limits. With the invention of injection molding, the plastics industry seemingly transformed overnight as companies were able to mass produce plastic items. It isn't just February when Leominster celebrates the pink plastic flamingo, but again with Flamingo Day celebrated in June, once again at the Monument Square. For those looking for authentic Featherstone flamingos, the Johnny Appleseed Rest Stop on Route 2 carries both pink and blue sets, as well as seasonal skeleton flamingos during the spooky season. T&G engagement editor Sarah Bonnercle is getting to know Central Mass by exploring some of the best places to go and things to do in Worcester County. If you have an idea or suggestion, please email sbarnacle@gannett.com. In closing, this community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you'd like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Ellen. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have your best day ever.